Hello, and welcome to today's live printing impressions webinar, Pre-Call Web Research, Knowing What to Say Will Increase Sales, sponsored by Osei, a Canon company. Hi, I'm Dave Laskowski, Group President of the Printing Impressions Publishing Group, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's live webinar. This is the second webinar in a four-part series on selling digital printing, and it has been graciously sponsored by Osei. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing all of these questions at the end of the hour webinar. You can send them in at any time. Please make sure to turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so you can utilize all of the bells and whistles on the console. Speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. We ask you to use social media, and would love for you to tweet about this webinar. So doing so, please use hashtag #PIGWebinar. So now I'd like to welcome back our digital sales experts, Bill Farquharson, president of Aspire 4 Incorporated, and Kelly Malazzi, president of Success in Print. We're going to help you prepare for a sales call by showing you how to utilize the web to open the door and land new clients. Both Bill and Kelly have sold digital printing and have dealt with the same challenges and objections that you face every day. And we're confident that each of you will learn practical takeaways that you can put into play immediately to help you drive more sales. And now, I'd like to turn over the presentation to Bill and Kelly, who will help you continue with today's webinar.
Very good. Thank you, Dave. And thanks a lot to our friends at Osei. We appreciate your sponsorship very much. Kelly, how are things?
Great. Doing great today, Bill. Thank you.
I'm nervous. You know why?
Why?
It's not because I'm presenting. I'm nervous because this is like the first time I've done it with an iPhone. And every time I touch this phone, it calls somebody, and so I'm trying to keep it away from my ear.
Oh, boy.
So I don't get disconnected. I just, very sensitive phone. Today, we are going to cover what I think Kelly would agree with is the single most important skill that a print sales rep needs to sell print, never mind digital, variable. But this acquired skill is so important, it's so valuable, that I think it's the difference between success and failure from this day moving forward. Kelly, you and I have talked about that before. What's your feeling on that? Give me some more background on that.
Well, I absolutely agree with it, and it really, though, is really applicable to the concept of new business development. Although you could use these same skills to research existing customers, and you probably should, it really helps us kind of as we change our mindset to being business growth strategists and understanding our clients' business needs. This what you're going to learn today really tells you how to do that and how to use the tools available to you to really kind of ramp up your game as far as what your approach is.
Yeah, there's so much at stake here. I think that there's the value of the call, the value of the voicemail, your ability to get appointments. I think your ability to differentiate yourself from your competition all comes down to how well you're able to look at a company prior to picking up the phone and deciding whether or not they're for you, and deciding what you should be saying. You know, that's what's at stake here. That's why we decided to make this the second in the series of four. It's just that important. So we'll do a quick review of what we heard the first time. In fact, if you're interested in that webinar, access to that can be found through the Printing Impressions website. You can go and watch that presentation from last month. We'll talk about the goal, the desired sales call. Where are we trying to get? You know, let's have a target first. Next, we'll talk about where to look for information on a customer. We've got some thoughts on that. And most importantly, what to look for. What are the goals of the research? What are the questions to ask? We are going to do a couple of live examples, actually. We have some examples that Kelly's going to look at. And then after that, Kelly, guess what? I've got a surprise for you.
Oh, Bill, I love your surprises.
No, you don't, you liar. All right, so let me introduce my friend Kelly Malazzi. Kelly was someone that I was coaching at one point, and he said, you know what, this woman is something special, and she's got a great perspective on the market, and we stayed in touch over the years, and I've just started working together about a year ago, as a matter of fact, and I've done a lot of these. And Kelly, if you can give us some more of your background, that way I won't be your only cheerleader.
Absolutely, and thank you for those kind words, Bill. But I got started in digital printing back in the early 90s, so I've been doing it, gulp, going on 20 years now. And I've worked for a variety of companies, large and small, mostly in the digital space, and also prepress and wide format, digital printing, things like that. And then most recently, I went to work for the parent company of OSE, Canon Business Solutions, and I was working with commercial printing equipment and selling that to commercial printers, and then started my own business when I had my twins 18 months ago. So I've been working with Bill on creating all of this content and working with large and small companies and helping them to drive sales and marketing.
Awesome.
Yeah, so why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Bill?
My own background. Sorry, I'm just reading that you're having some audio problems on my. Okay, well, I'm sorry. I'm this is the phone that I have to work with. So, yes, my own background again is print sales. I started in business forms actually in 1982. I became a print broker. I then wrote some training curriculum for some equipment manufacturers, and I've done a lot of work over the years with just about all of them. You know, and writing a lot of material. So having sold it myself, as you have, Kelly, and then now my company, Aspire 4, helps printing salespeople to grow their sales through a variety of sales training programs. In addition, I've got a free weekly video sales tip that goes out to several people, several thousand people every week, and that has been a lot of fun to do. So you're listening to two former print salespeople deliver this information. That's kind of the bottom line there. So this is I want to do just a quick review on what we talked about a month ago. First off, we talked about some digital myths, and these are two of the points that I wanted to bring up. Number one is to solve the problem, earn the order. That was the selling motto for UARCO Business Forms, the company that I worked with. They do a terrific job. They did a terrific job of training us, and the thought was, what problem does the client have? Not the prices, you know, of what they're paying is too high, but what are their business issues? You heard Kelly allude to that earlier. We're going to hit on that later. That was number one. The second part is the sales shift. Kelly, what's the sales shift that we need to go through, and what is it we're advising our clients to do?
Well, and again, it's really about moving away from the I want to talk to you about your print needs to I am someone who is a resource to you for helping you solve your problems. I'm here to help you you know, increase your sales, find more customers, get a better return on your marketing investment, those kinds of things. So it really is the shift to being, you know, to understanding marketing and being a specialist or a trusted advisor rather than the guy who gives them the best price on 1,000 postcards.
Sure, absolutely. You know, moving from marketing, from sales to marketing, and that's a big step for a lot of people. You know, the print sales reps that I talk to are very comfortable talking about print. But they're not terribly comfortable talking about business issues, and that's really what has to happen here. That's one of the changes that's got to take place. This was one of the two key concepts that we drilled into people last month, the 20-to-1 ratio. And this is something that we were taught many, many years ago. And this is the way it goes. It says that for every dollar your client spends on any given printed piece, they spend $20 using it. So things that would go into the usage cost then would be things like storage, waste, obsolescence, that type of thing. Shipping, if you're FedExing something everywhere, that goes into the 20-to-1, that goes into the $20 area. So this is something that was introduced to me very early in my sales career, and I still use this because the clients that I'm dealing with that are smart are looking at the $20 area. They're learning the story behind the printed piece. And then they are taking that story and they're trying to improve on the quality of the job. They're trying to improve on the, I'm sorry, the, the process, you know, trying to come up with a better way to solve the problem and therefore earn the order. That's a real key concept. The other one has to do with where digital and variable data printing fit. Kelly, why don't you walk us through these two points?
Well, what we're really looking at, again, is as we keep that 20-to-1 ratio in mind, is we have to think about what kind of value our offering brings to the table with regard to those documents. So what we like to say is I can do one of two or maybe both of these things for you, which is reduce the usage cost of that document. So we're going to address that $20 area. You know, rather than focus on the one, we're going to focus on the 20, figure out ways for them to be more efficient. And what you need to be thinking about when you think about that is on-demand printing, just-in-time delivery, rather than printing, 100,000 of something and having 80,000 of it go to waste through obsolescence or changes in your business, we're going to be able to provide you with the kinds of services that allow you to order just as much as you need. And then we're going to think about things like increasing the value of the document, which basically means, can this document bring me more revenue? And obviously with digital, the answer is yes. What we want to focus on is personalization, one-to-one marketing, and things that we can do to that piece to increase its value by increasing the response rate, by getting a better relationship going with that individual customer, by speaking to that customer on an individual basis. So using variable, using personalization, using customization to really make those documents have a lot more meaning and have a lot more value. So that's really where the shift takes place, is thinking, what ideas do I bring to the table? What can I do as a trusted advisor to help these organizations, yes, sometimes make changes and sometimes look at things differently, but again, it's all about increasing that value and reducing that cost. So that's really what the shift is.
And this is another key concept that if there is a third, this is kind of a crazy one that doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of people, especially when you're realizing that they make their living selling print. We make the comment, stop selling printing. You know, we would rather have you to think, what are the client's business needs? So I want to think like a business growth strategist. We go into detail on this in the prior webinar, but that's really what we're trying to get across here. What are their business challenges? What would Dale Carnegie do? That's the WWDCD. What would Dale Carnegie do? Dale Carnegie would tell you that you can get what you want when you figure out what the other guy wants and help him to get that. So you think about that, and we all think, gosh, they're worried about their print cost. I better call them up and tell them that we can get it cheaper, and that's not the case at all. The case is that they've got business issues that supersede the cost of the printed piece, and that's really, we're going to get back to a lot of that today. So here's a random sales call. This is one that's kind of off the shelf. Hi, this is Bill Farquharson. I'm calling from Farco Printing. We're a full-service printer. And I'm hoping to sit down with you, discuss your printing needs, talk to you about our capabilities. Kelly, what's wrong with that sales call?
Well, it's what everybody else is saying. It's focused on your iron. It's focused on services, and it pinholes you or kind of targets you as a printer, where when you go to the next slide and talk about the way we're kind of advocating making your approach is, again, it's more about ideas. It's about differentiating yourself by saying, I was on your website last week and I see that you're launching a new product. I have some ideas that I want to share with you about how to make that launch more successful. So that would cause the person on the other end of the phone to say, huh, this person's got something different to say. They're really focused on helping me. And not only that, but he's done his research. He knows that this is coming up, and I want to hear what these ideas are, because, you know, everyone wants to be more successful. They want to protect their jobs. They want to be a star by launching this great product and by having it be successful. So if you're the kind of person that can help with that, it's that much more likely that they're going to give you a shot and say, yeah, please come in. I do want to talk to you about that. So, again, even if they say, I don't want to hear your ideas, I don't need any help with launching this product, you're starting to establish your brand with them and really with everybody that you come in contact with, that you're a problem solver, you're an ideator, you're creative, you're an innovator, and that just makes it that much easier for you to, again, get in the door and have these conversations with, admittedly, a higher level of person, and most importantly, not a procurement person, not a buyer, not somebody whose job is to just find the low-cost provider and buy the cheapest price. So those are really all the benefits to that kind of an approach.
Ideator? Wow, I got to Google that.
It's a word.
Ideator.
It's a real word.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
so
it is.
Tell me words. All right.
Yeah.
So what does it take to get there then? These are the three things that Purchasing Magazine said were the top three reasons why a buyer chooses a specific sales rep. They said, why do you buy from the guy you buy from, the woman you buy from? And they said, well, number one, we go after raw sales ability. We think that we buy from the best salesperson. Best sales skills, trust. They cross their T's and they dot their I's. They've got confidence. They've got, you know, personality. All that is under the umbrella of raw sales ability. Number two, product knowledge. They say we buy from the rep who's got the best knowledge of his or her own industry and products. And number three, we care that they care about us. That's a big one, okay? There's more information publicly available right now on a company than ever before. And I'm old enough to remember selling in the early 80s when there was no internet, that we had to go to the library to do our research. And we would sit there with material that was 12 to 18 months old, and we considered that to be current. So we would look, and then we would go and say, sometimes the buildings were knocked down. I specifically remember being in Cambridge, Massachusetts, about to make a call on a company that wasn't there anymore. They were literally knocking it down as I was sitting in the parking lot. Not likely to happen these days. But the customer knowledge is king. What can you find out about them prior to picking up the phone? And then that theory of figuring out what they want. Well, what do they want? Well, certainly they want revenue. And there's only three ways to grow that revenue. You can go out and get more customers. You can go out and sell more to existing customers. Or you can go out and you can go into new markets. Those are really the three things. So, you know, that might be part of what they're looking for. They might want to improve their communication with customers. They might want to, they might be having a trade show coming up. Maybe they're a university and they want to send out less print, but they want to do it more impactfully, and they want to make certain that they are identifying only those students that have shown an interest with them. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal a few years ago that were talking about that whole concept. That's the thought process that you have to go through with every single call. So, Kelly, where do we look then for that information?
Well, when I sit down to do research, the very first place that I go is the company's website itself, because this is going to tell me a lot about who they are, what they believe, preferably some of the key players, and I'm going to make I'm going to do a basic assessment about what I think their business needs are. Secondary to that, I'm going to be looking at things like Google to see where they're appearing in the news, who might be blogging about them, what are things like Yelp and things like that possibly saying about them, so that, again, I can understand what some of their challenges and what some of their missions would be. I would absolutely follow them on social media. I'd be following their tweets, things like that. And then definitely you're going to, again, as far as what goes on in the news, you're going to want to look and see what the trades are saying, if they're in a particular business area that has its own publications, I'd be looking at those, Wall Street Journal, other trusted news sources, most definitely.
And what I'm looking for, well, there's a number of things I'm looking for. First of all, I figure out what they do. That's a no-brainer. I'm also always looking for titles and names of key contacts. Oftentimes I'll find those in the press releases. You know, press releases are boring, but they've got an issue and they've got a name. Well, the two things. So if they've had that, they've got something big coming up like a product improvement, then the product manager is going to be named. That's one of the people that I want to talk to. I'm trying to move up the food chain and find the requisitioner of the document, and that's one way to make it happen. So I'm looking to see if they've got any trade shows that they belong – I'm sorry, any trade associations that they belong to. Why? Kelly, what am I going to do with a trade association name?
Well, when I look at that trade association, one of the things I tend to do is actually go to that site and look at who else belongs to that association and what they do for these customers. Are they, you know, are they somebody where they go for an annual conference? Is it a source of information? Is it a source of customers or networking? And then I would actually reach out to somebody within that trade association and say to them, you know, I'm preparing to make a sales call on one of your members. What I need to understand from you is, what are some of the changes, you know, some of the challenges that they're facing? What value from a marketing and a sales and a business growth standpoint could I be approaching? And they, because by virtue of why they're there is to help their members, you know, they're more likely to be willing to talk with you, and they're also industry experts, and everybody likes to, you know, to be consulted as an expert. So they are very happy to share that information with you.
I might also be looking for a mission statement, something basically what I'm trying for here is a way to finish the sentence. The purpose of my call is, without talking about print. So if I can align myself with something on their website, if I can drop it into my conversation, as Kelly mentioned before, what the impact of that is that the recipient of the voicemail or the call itself is saying, this guy came prepared. I'm not just the next name on some list that he bought. I believe there's absolutely no excuse for not doing the research prior to picking up the phone. Part of what you can find out, by the way, on what you're looking at this information is their selling philosophy. All right, I'll get to more than that in a second. Actually, I want to talk first about the database sense. You might get an idea by hitting on the Contact Us button, how they collect information on customers and what kind of information, how the depth of the information. Because if they don't, they just say, if you want more information, click here. Well, then maybe there's an opportunity for you to go in and talk about variable data printing by collecting good data. So here again, you know what? You can go after their, you can look at what their civic contributions are. We had a client that we were researching out in Denver. It turned out the sales manager was a big bike rider. He would ride in fundraisers for the Boys and Girls Club. So what my client did was called up the Boys and Girls Club and said, I want to get involved in your foundation work and I want to donate some prints. And that's how he got in with the sales manager, because the guy showed up and there he was as a sponsor. That's how he got into the account. Good information to have. But their buying philosophy is in there as well. Kelly, what does that mean? What's their buying philosophy on a website? How do you know?
Well, it's basically the way they sell is the way they buy. So if you can tell by looking at their website that they're all about quality and prestige and value and believing in a high level of service as far as how they sell, then you could argue that that's the way they're going to buy as well. Conversely, if they are, you know, the low-cost provider, we're the cheapest place in town, we, you know, we're all price, 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 you could pretty much assume that that's also the way they're going to buy.
Yeah, very. It's very clear. It's, you know, if their slogan is, I saw one today, you know, super cheap, and then they have the name of their company, and you know darn well what's coming. You know, your price is too high. So it's really just that, it's that that differentiator that I'm looking for. What I'm not looking for are print opportunities, which is kind of crazy, but that's not the initial thing. I need to know that they're there. Don't get me wrong. But that's not, I'm not going to go online and say, gee, I wonder if they've got any brochures. I wonder if they've got any print that I could do, or any labels I could do, whatever. You know, that's not what I want. I'm not looking to go talk to their purchasing agent about their print so that I can quote something, because that ends very badly. It ends with the phrase, your price is too high. And yet that's what primarily, probably 95% of the time, that's what's happening. We're looking for somebody that we can go talk to about their print, and that's got to change. The big issues then are their business issues. As I mentioned before, they grow in one of three ways, and this has to do with me and you as well. They get more customers, they can get greater share of an existing customer, or they can go into new markets. Those are the big issues, along with how they communicate. You know, I just went through the college search process with my middle daughter, and it was amazing how some of these schools asked for really in-depth information on Emma and which ones asked nothing about her except when she's going to graduate. That was it. And so we would get this generic information versus the schools that were really hungry and wanted to get the great information. Now, Kelly's going to talk to you more about that. Because she, and someday she'll be an expert on that, won't you, Kelly?
You got it.
So then picture this. Reverse engineer the sales call. How can you, if they called you and they said, can you help us to grow our business? What questions would you ask? That's the key, the questions to ask. So if they're asking you then to, let's say, help with a trade show or launch a product or to build their database, all of this information that you're hoping that they would ask you is the call that you are going to make. So it no longer becomes about print. It becomes about their business. So then, Kelly, what are the questions to ask?
Well, that actually stems from a good point, too, about these are about questions. This is not necessarily to say that you know how to run their business or you should be their next VP of marketing and know absolutely everything. This is really about understanding the fundamentals about marketing and sales growth. So we want to know who is your target market. We want to know what have you tried in the past. You know, what works for you and what doesn't. We want to know about the quality of the data as it exists. That was actually one of the questions that one of our attendees today asked us is, isn't this really all about data? And there certainly is a very important component to, you know, what do you know about your customers? How do you communicate with them now? And really understand, you know, so you can identify whether there's some things they haven't tried or some ways to do things differently that you can bring to the table, again, to differentiate yourself and to do what you say you're going to do, which is help them grow their business. So you'll find the answers as you're communicating with this prospect. Again, you're not expected to bring the answers to the table in that very, very first meeting. You're not even necessarily expected to present the solution in that very first meeting. This is really about understanding who they are, where they want to be, and how to help get them there. And that may happen in subsequent meetings.
But I want to hit that point again. You don't need to know how to run their business. You need to know the questions to ask. That's the big skill that's got to come out of this, okay? So the goal of your research then is to come up with that intro, that reason to call, and to be able to finish the sentence, the purpose of my call is, without talking about printing. All right, so Kelly, you ready to show us exactly what we're talking about here?
I am getting there. This might just take a second because this is
all
my
right.
We just learned how to do this earlier in the week. And I'm just trying to make my screen bigger. And it's going that way, but it doesn't seem to want to go down. So, nope. Okay, let's try this. Do you see my screen now?
Mine says connecting to server, so you're getting there.
Okay.
Yep.
My green box is just not,
there we go.
I haven't, okay. So you probably only see the top part of the screen. You don't see the whole thing because the green box is not coming all the way down like it's supposed to. But what we're looking at here, and Bill hinted at this in just a couple of minutes ago, is, you know, we've identified, and actually the whole entire industry of digital printing has identified university and college recruitment as a fantastic vertical market to approach. And as Bill mentioned, there are some schools that are still accepting, you know, they're receiving 10 to 20 times the amount of applicants as what they accept for incoming freshmen. So those, you could argue, they have a different set of business challenges with regard to their communications and their marketing, but it might not necessarily be in acquiring new students. It might be in a different, in amping up the quality of the applicants that they get, but it may, you know, that may not be top of mind for them. Now, an organization like Elmhurst College, which is right here in Illinois, and admittedly, my high school babysitter is going to actually be attending Elmhurst College in the fall, so this is one of the reasons that I decided to take a peek at them. They're very well known. They've got a great reputation, but they're fairly local, so they get a lot of commuter students, but they also have robust dormitories and things like that. So I thought, how does Elmhurst College gather data on their prospective students, and what would they then particularly do with that information? Because, again, as I look at this site, I'm saying to myself, what are their business challenges? What are their challenges as far as helping themselves grow and become more profitable and serve, you know, serve their constituents, being, you know, students and faculty better? So one of the very first things I'm going to do is I'm going to go to this request information button to find out what exactly is it that they're looking for from their potential students. And And so there's a request information button, and I don't think you can see what's going on at the bottom of this, but it's basically saying, tell us who you are. Are you an incoming student? Are you a high school senior? You know, things like that. And once you click on the fact that, okay, I'm a high school student, and I go to next, it's going to then ask me a whole lot of information about who I am and what I'm looking for. So it's asking me all about my name, who I am, where I am, what my ethnicity is, when I'm planning on attending, what my primary and secondary academic interests are, what my GPA is, what my ACT scores were, and things like that. So theoretically, once I fill, as a prospective student, once I fill all that information in, if they were utilizing the tools of variable data, and again, I couldn't really say whether they are or whether they aren't, but as a salesperson, what I'm looking at is there is a lot you can do to communicate with this individual student or potential student one-to-one. I could customize a piece that says, you know, here's where you're from in the country, here's what Elmhurst looks like. You mentioned that you want to study pre-med, and we are the preeminent Midwestern private school that deals with pre-med, you know, things like that. So it really gives them some fantastic opportunities to, again, communicate in a more meaningful and kind of one-to-one way with that potential student, as opposed to just sending them a very generic piece that really, you know, doesn't say much more than, hey, if you're really lucky, you'll get into our school.
And Kelly, I just want to jump in with a couple things here. First of all, if you're having trouble seeing this, click on the Flash tab. Look at the tab at the top, it says Flash Player. That might help you. Now, just one thing, Kelly. What's at stake here is picture a classroom, right, at Elmhurst. Picture a classroom. It's not just about, you know, getting the right information out. Picture a classroom that's got 40 seats in it. 30 of those seats are taken up by students. Kelly, what do each one of those empty seats represent?
Incremental revenue.
Yeah. Because,
that they're losing.
Exactly. If they can get one more person, just one more person, that's almost 100% profit. That's what's in it for them, okay? I also understand that some folks are having some audio problems and it's being worked on. As a matter of fact, so I'm reading some notes here from our webinar administrator. We apologize for that. But that's the issue here. So, all right, Kelly, go back to Elmhurst. Keep going.
Okay. Yeah. So again, that's the kind of thing that what I'm working on in all of this research that I'm doing and understanding how they're collecting this information. My philosophy is about what we could potentially do with that information, and all of this is informing my approach. I'm going to use what I've learned in my letter to them, my cold call letter that I send, in the voicemails that I leave, in all the communications. My message is, I want to talk to you about how we can create really meaningful communication pieces on a one-to-one basis with these potential students that you're gathering all this information from. So that's one idea of what, you know, what I might say if I were selling digital printing to a school like Elmhurst College. Now, what I want to show you kind of conversely, as we mentioned, there are some schools that, you know, don't necessarily collect the same amount of data on their potential students because, again, they're getting more applicants than they know what to do with. I still, however, think that there is a lot of potential in a university like this one, and much to Bill's chagrin, I'm using University of Michigan because that's my alma mater. He was a UMass, and I think, what was it, Bama or something like that, where you went
Alabama,
for a while, Bill?
Alabama, baby, sure.
Right, okay.
Well,
so there's still, you know, again, even though we see, you know, when we look at prospective students, you know, good old Michigan is really more like, hey, do you want to come and visit? You can come and visit. If you want to just apply to the school right now, they use this kind of universal application module for applying, which I did not want to click on, but it clicked on anyway. You know, what are the schools and colleges? What about the parents, new student programs, things like that? Again, I would definitely want to have my finger on the pulse of what they're doing from the social media standpoint, so I might look at what they're saying on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and things like that. But just because they're not collecting, you know, individual data about the individual students doesn't mean that they aren't still struggling in some ways. And you can assume that even a high-end university, they still do have challenges. There are still people within that organization that are, you know, being kept up at night by thinking, if only, you know, if only we had maybe a better caliber of students. What if they're trying to increase their number of out-of-state students because that's a higher, you know, a higher tuition rate? These are things that, again, I'm thinking about what they might be, and I'm still going to craft my message to say, we want to help you, you know, increase the whatever we think the business problem is, or try to get to the bottom of those business problems. We want to help you communicate more effectively. And again, if nothing else, you can go back to what we said earlier, which is increasing the value of the documents or reducing their usage cost. That tends to have a very, very big impact on really any organization in general. So, Bill, is there anything else you want to say about university recruitment before I move on?
No, go ahead and move on. I know there's a bit of a delay here, so I'll just fill in. And I was really surprised when I did some research on schools that these big state schools are having no problem. As Kelly said, they're having no problem whatsoever. My middle daughter is going to go to UMass Amherst, my alma mater, and they said that with 34,000 applications for 4,600 spots, not a problem. The smaller schools, the liberal arts schools, they're sucking wind. They've seen a drop in enrollment and a drop in attendance. So this is a very real application we just gave you. And so now we just showed you how to do the research and the talk track right down to the voicemail, as a matter of fact. All right, Kelly, tell us about specialized.
Right. So another philosophy that I adopted kind of as I was going through my career and getting a little more established was I think that it makes a lot of sense to develop vertical markets where you have some sort of a personal attachment or some kind of personal knowledge. And that, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be an expert in any of these, but my point was I'm a cyclist. At one point I was a very, very avid cyclist, and I noticed that when I started going to cycle shops and spending a lot of money on bikes and accessories and things like that, that there was no messaging coming back to me from either the retailer where I bought the equipment or the manufacturer itself. And so to me, that was a real message of an opportunity. And so I started doing research on bicycle manufacturers and started looking at them and saying, you know, I think that bicycle manufacturers could do a better job of marketing and supporting both the dealers and the people that sell their products for them and supporting their own efforts as well. This was kind of a great vindication for me, Bill. Recently, I was talking to one of my customers after I had just presented this same exact kind of message to them. And he came to me yesterday in a meeting and said, you know, I got to thinking about what you were saying, and, you know, I really like to hunt. And when I really started looking at my mailbox, I realized that a lot of hunting companies, you know, companies that make things that I need to hunt and places that I go to hunt, send me direct mail. So it got me thinking, I should really target them as, you know, somebody that would be good customers for me. Because I know so much about hunting, I can really talk their talk and talk their language to them. And it was such a great vindication for me that people are actually listening to us and you know, using the advice that we give and actually putting that theory into practice and, you know, and believing it, because it absolutely is true. I had more luck sending messages to chief marketing officer levels in this particular industry because I had that personal knowledge, because I could say, you know, I've got a specialized Ale Vita. I bought it in this time, and I guess I'm just really kind of surprised that I haven't received any information about upgrades or service or accessories or any of this stuff that you've got going on that I can see on this website. And it really led to some really good conversations, not only with Specialized, which is the bike I own, but with Trek and with Terry and with a lot of other manufacturers. So it kind of almost takes you to a different level from a credibility standpoint when you know what it is that they're talking about, and you can talk with them about, you know, some of the challenges that are kind of built into these kinds of things. And it really is more of that, they call it a provocation sale, where you're just saying, like, I guess I'm confused about why this isn't happening more, or what is the impact on your business that somebody like me, who has spent thousands of dollars on your equipment, hasn't received any follow-up communication of any kind. So as
Kelly, I'm a Specialized customer as well. I've got the tallest LA you could find. I'm the guy you want to draft behind.
Uh-huh.
You know, at 6'6", I'm the guy you want to be behind.
Absolutely.
But you mentioned something interesting that I want to back up. You said, you know, that somebody took your advice. You planted a seed with them. And you've sold variable data printing before. And you can test that oftentimes you're having a conversation, talking to the client about what could be, right? You could do this. Why aren't you doing this? And then a month later, the phone rings, and they say, you know, I was in a meeting, and I was thinking about what you were saying. The selling cycle of digital and variable is longer, and partially because there aren't untapped markets. We have to go find them. We have to go plant these seeds in our customers based on what we've seen on things like their website to say, hey, Specialized, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you getting a greater share of customer? Why aren't you getting, you know, Kelly's next bike? Or what about, you know, talking about getting some new handlebars put on that thing? Or, you know, capturing that information and then be really putting your arms around her and saying, we want to increase our improve our relationship with you so that we can be there for you and make more money. But it's that seed planting that I think is kind of interesting.
Absolutely. And so, folks, you know, outside of this particular case of this bicycle manufacturer, I want to call your attention to a couple of things that are more universal that you can apply to really any manufacturer or retailer that's out there. One of the things that's special about this company, and it's not special, but they sell through a network of dealers. So when you're thinking about what would be some good suspects for you, it's anybody who makes a product who also sells it through secondary channels, dealers, resellers, things like that. So this really could apply to just about anything that is made and then sold through another channel. Because their so Specialized challenge is the direct sales of selling the bikes directly to the consumers, but it's also that relationship and that communication between them and the retailer. How are they communicating to the retailer? How are they keeping the retailer up on all the product knowledge, the new products that are coming out, and then things like the things to start thinking about when you think about a kind of a bigger picture vertical market is what are all the ancillary opportunities? If it's bicycles, it's the service, it's the tune-ups, it's the accessories, it's the apparel. So you kind of create this like top level kind of pyramid, and then you work your way down to all the other things that are affected or all the other ways that have, you know, again, have needs and challenges with regard to how they market themselves, how they sell, and how they communicate with their customers. So that's really what I wanted to call your attention to is again, if I recap this, think about things in your own life, whether it's sports, your hobbies, where you shop, maybe you really like cars. As my one customer said, you know, I really like hunting, and it really got me thinking about how they market themselves. Every business that exists today wants to be more successful than it is today. And the way that they become more successful is to sell more. So you can be the one to help them sell more, and that is universal. It's true of your business. It's true of my business, Bill's business, everybody's business. So as a specialist, as a person who has some expertise in this digital space, you can help people sell more stuff, and that's what makes you valuable, and that's what makes you special, and that's what makes you different than the 10 other printers that have called them today.
Okay, so I want to give everyone a process then to think this whole thing through. You heard Kelly say that you can you look at your own life, okay? Kelly, I just walked out of my bank.
Okay.
Now, that's the kind of thing. If I walk into a bank and I see a sign that says great rates on new cars, that's an opportunity, yes?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. How do I get to that bank then? What's my thought process? What do I do?
Well, again, you want to go to the person who owns the responsibility for growing that revenue. So I would say, you know, again, it's finding out within that organization who is responsible, you know, who created that piece, that little sign that went on the door, and why did they create it? What were they hoping to achieve from it? And what else can you do to further that same message? Putting a sign on the door is great for those people that walk into the bank and actually notice the sign, which most people don't. But what if, you know, again, it's kind of those what ifs. What if we could create, you know, marketing pieces that would speak to people on an individual level? What about the people that don't come into the bank? What about people that just bank online? You know, and you want to start getting, having that conversation, asking those questions of that person, and it's typically going to be a marketing person within that organization that you want to talk to.
Okay. Now, this is my surprise, Kelly. This is Six Flags New England.
Okay.
I grew up in Western Massachusetts, and Six Flags used to be Riverside Park. And this is, we used to go there all the time. Great little place, and Six Flags bought them and redid the whole thing, right? My kids want to go to this, so we took them out there. We go all the time, every year. And I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, interesting opportunity. So, Kelly, if you were going to call on a Six Flags New England, and I sent you the URL here.
Yep, I just can you see my screen?
I can, yep.
Okay.
So you're going to call on Six Flags New England. What's the thought process, Kelly? How do we you know, teach everyone exactly what they should be doing, first, second, third, fourth?
Right. So the very first thing I look at when I'm looking at any opportunity is to say, what are their business challenges? What is Six Flags trying to accomplish? I'm going to make an assumption here, and I'm going to say that based on, again, what I just said about everybody wanting more sales, I'm going to say Six Flags wants more people at their park tomorrow than they had yesterday. So when I look at this site, I'm going to look at things like the groups and see that, okay, they have specific offerings and specific products and services for groups. So I would want to get in touch with the person that is in charge of this, whoever group sales are, speak to, you know, have a conversation with that person and say, you know, my job is to help you get more groups to your park. I'm going to also look at, you know, really just back to the main page. It looks as if they have a lot of events coming up, a lot of concerts. You know, a lot of different things. I would probably read the blog to see what they're saying, what kind of messaging are they putting out there, things like that. I'm really just going to look overall for what, you know, again, what are the business challenges, what are they trying to accomplish, and how can I help with things like that. So there was one thing that I thought was kind of interesting that just flashed by my screen. I think it's going to come by again as it just kind of scrolls through all this stuff. The blog. So, Bill, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I would want to know what kind of information they capture on people as they come through, so that
right.
so they could get people to come back. I think the idea of a group sales rep, calling on a group sales rep, is a good idea. Certainly.
Yeah.
I've got another minute for this particular thing. Then we got to wrap.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, I'm just generally looking for anything. Like, look at this relax in style. You can have your own private cabana with private wait staff, souvenirs and TV. You know, this to me would say, are they trying to appeal to a higher end customer? And if so, what are some more effective ways to communicate with a higher end visitor than somebody who's, you know, looking for 2-for-1 deals and things like that? So again, it's just any talking point I can extract from this. Is just part of my opening statement, my approach for I want to help you get more people to Six Flags. And more importantly, once they're here, we want to help them spend more money. So how do we message, how do we create pieces that will convey all of that to a captive audience? And going back again, what is the data like? You know, how are you communicating with customers now? What have you tried? Who is your target market? You know, all those fundamental questions are very important once we get that person on the phone and talk to them.
And what you'll find out, gang, is that the questions that you ask of one company are very much similar to the questions you ask of the next company. You know, so this becomes an acquired skill that you pick up very quickly, and then you can move them from one industry to another. So, you know, in summary, this takes time. It is so valuable. It is so important. We urge you to sit and take the time to do the research. You know, this is also something you could do in a sales meeting where you could just bring in one prospect or something and do it all together. This is something you might even hire someone to do for you. You could find a marketing intern at a local college and say, here, I want you to have this skill. I want you to tee the ball up for me and tell me exactly what the prospects are. But think backwards. Reverse engineer that call and pretend, okay, so if they called me and they said, these are our business needs, what questions would I ask? Because, you know, even if it doesn't work, the worst-case scenario is that I'm going to be able to build the brand of, hey, this is what I do. I'm a problem solver. So if this isn't your problem, what is? Before we get to questions, I'll just remind you that we have another, that the third installment is going to be on creating a prospecting plan for selling digital and variable data printing. And I will turn this back to Dave, and we will go over some Q&A.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, Bill and Kelly. Great job, as always. And I know we had some technical difficulties on the sound for some of you, so I wanted to apologize for that. But I did want to get to a few questions. And, you know, one Kelly, I think you hit on a little bit earlier. We had a question about isn't VDP all about the data and that the client must have their data in order agree or disagree. And I was sitting there reading that thinking, isn't that also an opportunity, though, for those clients that are out there that may have great content or a great opportunity, but not the data. Isn't this an opportunity to help them with some database management and gaining some data?
I think it is a yes and no answer, Dave, and that is that, yeah, of course, if they have great data, you want to be able to utilize that. But that's kind of one of the fallacies, I think, that everybody says, oh, my customers don't want to do variable because their data is a mess. It is absolutely an opportunity to either help them get their house in order with, like you said, database management, if you have any expertise in that. And even if you don't, folks, partner up with somebody who does. It is not that challenging of a thing to find somebody who's a database expert and partner with them to help your customers get that stuff in order. And even further, there are customers out there that, as you said, Dave, have great products to sell and don't have any idea who their target market even is or how they would go about getting that data. And you as printers have a great resource or many great resources available to you in the database companies like InfoUSA. You know, to just call them up and say, I'm a printer. I need help with getting data. I'm looking for, you know, people that make over $300,000 that live within a 45-mile radius of Westport, Connecticut. And bam, they'll say, I've got 17,000 of them right here for you. And you buy it from them. And that's part of what you – so you resell that data and you make it a turnkey operation where they tell you who the target – you know, who their targets are, and you help them get the data.
Yeah, perfect. And, Bill, you mentioned earlier about not needing to know all the answers to a question that a prospect's, that you're calling on for a prospect. And Paul asks, he's confused. As, you know, we hear everything about printers becoming marketing service providers and marketing professionals, why wouldn't we need to know the answers to questions that a prospect tasks us with? You have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. You know, the reason I want you to focus on just the questions is to take the pressure off knowing. Unless you run a business, I don't really think that the client, you should be talking to the client about how to run the business. But if you say to the client, who is your target market? How do people find you now? What percentage of your business is repeat? What percentage of your business is new? Why do you lose a customer? What's your competition doing? And all of these are very good open-ended questions. And simply by focusing on those, you let the client speak, you listen, and they provide the answers. That's what I'm trying to say there, Dave. Kelly, was that clear? Was that the – am I adding to that? Not the biggest issue.
Yeah, and, you know, I think there's a big difference, Bill, between understanding the fundamentals of marketing and knowing what they are. I don't think either Bill or I advocate trying to sell yourself as a marketing services provider. There's a lot of debate in the industry about that right now and competing with your customers and things like that. This is really about understanding fundamentals of marketing to the table, not telling them, I know more than you, and, you know, because I actually had some customers push back on me about that a few weeks ago to say, you can't go in there and tell them that you know marketing, or it's just understanding it, and it's really about those good questions to ask.
Yeah, I'm not sure who wants to tackle this one, but, one of the things that comes up all the time, especially with digital and VDP, is, you know, kind of getting to that next layer above the print buyer to find the, you know, whether it's the CMO, the vice president of marketing, someone that's actually controlling the budget. And Matt asked a question about, you know, what are some of the tips to finding the right individual to deliver our message? You know, how do we find the right person inside the company that we're calling on that's responsible for the business improvement ideas that we are targeting?
Well, certainly that's what we covered last month, and you can go back and review that webinar that we the OSA webinar that we did a month ago, where we talked about where to look for prospects. Kelly, off the top of my head, what I think of is LinkedIn. Now, if I have a company name and I want to find some bodies, that's the first place I'm going to go. You?
Yeah, LinkedIn most definitely. Depending on what kind of company it is and what information they have on their website, sometimes press releases name key players that are, you know, that have that revenue responsibility, that are the ones with the chief marketing, chief information, chief financial. Sometimes they're listed on the kind of corporate governance. If they're publicly traded, they have to have that information on their websites. But it really does boil down to, you know, kind of being a little bit of a detective. And so this is why, and I'm a big advocate of this, having a very robust network on LinkedIn just gets you to a lot more people, because somebody you know might know somebody who knows somebody who's, and you can, you know, there are some tips and tricks on LinkedIn to, kind of looking at the, once you look at one person's profile, who else is looking at those profiles, and they've also viewed other ones. You know, there's some pretty kind of detective-like things you can do on LinkedIn to get to who that person actually is that you want to talk to.
Great. And, Cal, you mentioned something earlier, which I was wondering if you could just take a second and expand upon it. You know, you talked about, social media in general, but you also mentioned Yelp, which was something that I'm unfamiliar with. Can you expand a little bit about what Yelp is?
Yeah, Yelp is a community of kind of reviews. So I'm not sure if they're everywhere in the country, but certainly in Chicago and I think on the East Coast in some markets. It's basically like if you're looking for a doctor or a restaurant to go to, it's going to be user-generated feedback. And it's becoming even more and more popular with smartphones and you know, new generation technology that, like, my husband and I were going to a restaurant, and on the way there, we looked at all the reviews to see, oh, everybody that came there gave it 4 stars. We have, you know, we've got a pretty good chance of having a good meal tonight because, and right on his smartphone, he was looking at Yelp and seeing, you know, what people said about it. So it's another one of those, you know, you hear a lot more about reputation management today and people want to know what's being said about them on the internet. This probably pertains more to the retail and service industries than just about anything else. But if your prospect is a retailer or even something like a bank or anything, I would absolutely check and see what their users are saying about them on these kinds of collaborative user-generated sites.
Great. And just more of a comment, less than a question, Alan had mentioned that he uses Hoover's Business frequently as a great source of company info and especially contact information of executives. And we do have a sister publication here called Target Marketing Magazine, which actually has a terrific website called Direct Marketing IQ, which when you go to that site, we actually archive pieces of direct mail, and it's called the Directory of Major Mailers. Which is, it's a paid product, but we actually not only have the contact information of all of the major mailers that we collect information from, but you can actually break it down by who's doing variable, static, four color, black and white, along with full contact information. We actually scan every piece of mail that we collect, and you can see a high-res PDF of those mailings. So just another aspect, again, that's directmarketingiq.com as another resource for you out there. But I just wanted to thank everybody again for attending. We're just about out of time. And on behalf of OSE and Printing Impressions, I wanted to thank you for attending today's webinar. As Bill mentioned, the next webinar in this series is called Selling Digital and Variable Data Printing. It starts with a prospecting plan, and that's going to take place on August 25th. So please visit www.piworld.com for more information on these upcoming webinars. And when you're there, make sure you visit Bill and Kelly's blog. They're constantly writing about sales on our website. So before you leave, take a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that's going to appear on your screen next. Your feedback is greatly appreciated, and it really helps us influence what webinars we bring to you in the future. So for Bill and Kelly, again, this is Dave Laskowski with Printing Impressions, and I wanted to thank you for attending today's webinar.